Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire.
We're celebrating 50 episodes of Empire Lines with three specials recorded offline and in the museum space. This time in the William Morris Gallery in London for their latest exhibition, Althea McNeish, Colour is Mine. Co-curator Rose Sinclair unwraps McNeish's bold textile designs and Caribbean and British colonial connections through her infamous Bachelor Girls room installation.
My name is Rose Sinclair. I'm a lecturer in design at Goldsmiths University of London, and I am co-curator of the show Althea McNeish, Colour is Mine at the William Morris Gallery.
So Althea McNeish came to the UK from Trinidad 2 years after the SS Windrush in 1950. How did she interact with and perceive British culture and design from the Caribbean?
What you have to understand is that Althea was already an artist before she came to England. She was already embedded within art and art traditions. People like Sybil Attek, M.P. Aladdin, and these other great Trinidadian artists had already supported her in her artwork. She came here on a scholarship. So it wasn't about so much her being ingrained within a British art tradition. It was her bringing with her a tradition of art from Trinidad and then embracing art and design from Europe. And I would call mashing up those traditions with what she already had learnt. Sybil Attek's work embraced a kind of expressionist approach to art, and M.P. Aladdin's work was already emboldened with a kind of a folk tradition of an art approach to looking at local cultural and rural traditions. And you can see that in Althea's work, but also she'd already worked for a number of years in the technical illustration, if you like, in the local government department. So she had a very technical eye already. She'd won a scholarship for architectural design, but then took up a printing course at the Central School of Printing. So she changed disciplines. And the reason why she didn't go to architectural school, because she thought it was a man's job. She didn't want to do it. The kind of structure of empire meant they had to come here to do that formal training. And we can see that in lots of the writers and artists. It tells us that empire was an institution. There was a structure, and it tells us that artists that were resident abroad, as in Trinidad, Jamaica, any of those Caribbean countries, the only way that they could fulfill their final formal education was to actually emigrate. So some emigrated and stayed in England, and some came here and did their education and went back to their islands. But in order to get that degree education, they couldn't get it on their islands because the government at the time didn't actually institute any of those higher education policies on the islands. So it meant they had to leave to fulfil those ambitions that they had to do any training in art or design. And it made it difficult for them to go back and do that work on their islands, if you like, because, again, the infrastructure to develop that work didn't always exist.
McNeish designed for the likes of Liberty, Dior and Heels, and many of her fabrics reference other places like Egypt and Mexico. Do you think that she was capitalising on a kind of general trend of Orientalism or othering?
No, she was just inspired by everything she saw. When we were actually researching her work and her life, and she left behind such a legacy of her sketchbooks and her work. She collected everything. She saved everything. She spent lots of time in the British Museum. She spent lots of time travelling, and she would record everything, Peruvian pottery, stuff from Mexico. And whatever she recorded, she would then use that to inspire her design work. And she talks about, even in her later years, that she is a citizen of the world. She's both Carib, she's both African, she's Trinidadian. She talks about the nature of herself and how that nature inspires her work. One of the key pieces in the exhibition is called Cheribolus, and it's onions. She takes the humble onion and it inspires this magnificent blues, reds, amazing textiles for Liberties, for instance. And she does that with such panache and boldness. It isn't about just this notion of othering. It's this notion that anything can inspire you to create a piece of artwork or a piece of design for textiles. And she saw her textiles as an extension of her painting. She never stopped painting, but her textiles was another form of painting.
We really see that in McNeish's fabric Golden Harvest, which blends influences like Van Gogh's wheat fields to the Trinidad sugarcane. She talks a lot, though, about black as a power colour in particular. Why was that?
She had this thing that she didn't like the colour grey. Grey has nothing in it, doesn't inspire her. She loved black because it had power in it. And you'll see that in a lot of her designs. She uses black to emphasise, either to give life or to give vibrancy, or to even add to the abstraction of a design. There's a design that she has in there called Arena, and she takes the flower stamens almost to abstraction, all multi-layered with reds and oranges and yellows. And then on the top, this intermeshing crisscross, literally those are the stamens of the flowers that she's actually extracted and taken into this sort of stamen layers. And she does the same thing with Golden Harvest. It's this multifaceted layers of colours. The actual wheat field stems are actually drawn directly onto the screen, and she does this with black. And you can almost feel like you're walking through the wheat fields of Essex, but you could almost feel if you closed your eyes, you're transported back to the sugarcane fields of Trinidad. But she said it was the first time she'd seen wheat fields, and it was the memory of Trinidad that she sees by looking at the sun setting through the wheat fields of Essex.
You mentioned her interdisciplinary practice, from paintings to set design, even the curtains for the P&O ferry SS Oriana. But in this episode, we're talking about one thing in particular. Can you tell me about the Bachelor Girls Room?
Originally, Alfie McNeish designed this for the 1966 Ideal Home exhibition, where she created a room for the young girl about town, age 26, who had a little bit of money to spend, based on a budget, I think it was £356, which is equivalent to probably about £5,000 today. And she kitted it out with furniture that you could actually move around, take apart, put together, but statement pieces of furniture. It didn't need a dining table because she thought you could sit on the floor to dine with your friends. It had one statement armchair. She thought that you would be a DIY girl about town as well. So it would be a piece that you could put together, take apart, but you can add to. It was also decorated with textiles, which were her thing. This was quite significant that here was a professional black designer designing a commercial space for the general girl about town. So think about the black population at the time, or think about the general population at the time. We were still a small amount of the population, but she's designing for the general population. It was also showcased on British TV. It was the first time the Ideal Home exhibition was showcased in colour on BBC Two. So it was beamed into millions of homes around the country as well. Anything that was showcased in the Ideal Home exhibition at that time was also ready and up for sale in the local stores 6 to 8 weeks after the show finished. So this was an ideal opportunity to showcase what British design could be and should be for the consumer market by a technically British designer into British homes, in through British stores. And one of her fabrics, the curtains, were Cavendish Textiles. And Cavendish Textiles is an offshoot of John Lewis's. So you could go to John Lewis's and buy her fabrics to decorate your home. So we have this fallacy of being told, on one hand, even in 1966, to go back where you belong, to go back home. But here was a British designer designing curtains for your home. So this notion of the aesthetic of the British home being transformed by a black designer, that's a unique kind of composition to put into the design canon. But if you opened a design book, where would you see that discussion being argued or debated or being even talked about? In this installation, we have the original curtain that was in the Bachelor Girls room with some of the ephemera. But what Studio Gnarly have done, who are the exhibition designers for that, they have recreated the room using the fabrics that were reissued by Liberties of Althea's designs. But they've done it in a contemporary way for the young woman of today. So the woman that's come to Britain today, if you're a young woman, you've migrated here to London from anywhere in the world. What would your contemporary 21st century Bachelor Girl room look like today? How would you use it? How would you use your space? And considering that some of us live in one room because of the price of rent in London, what would your space look like? How could you section it off? How could you play with it? And that's what they've kind of brought in. It's that same kind of playfulness, being able to adapt it and use it in different ways. And I think they've done that with panache, the use of the fabrics. They've done that with the way that they've had the room built. So you walk in and it allows you to move around the room and explore the room. And it has spaces where you can sit, where you can relax, where you can read, where you can entertain. And it's very much in the nature of how Althea herself created the space.
McNeish also combated the sort of floral stereotype of women's clothing, and she pioneered developments in synthetic fabrics and designs in order to complement women's bodies in the female form. How did she change textile production?
Upstairs in the first floor, there is a collection of work called Terraline Toile, and this was part of the work done by one of the marketing executives, Daniels. He actually approached McNeish at a trade show in Manchester, initiated by the Cotton Board, where designers were brought up, where they showcased all the different kind of new works that they were doing. And he said that the work that McNeish was doing was so colourful, it just hit you from across the room. And the video about how he met McNeish is actually in the installation. What used to happen when textile designers would design cloth, they just designed the fabric and then fashion designers would just take that and make their garments. What they did with the Terraline Toile programme was that they put the textile designers and the fashion designers together. So McNeish would design the textiles on her paper designs. They would then have a discussion with the fashion designers. And the fashion designer would say, well, if you did this or did this or did this, we could adapt the garments much, much better to the design work. And McNeish would go away back to her studio, redesign the paper pattern and come back the following day with the designs already redone. What that started to do was change the way in which the fashion process would work. And that actually had impact on how fashion designers and textile designers would then start to work together. So we'll start to put them together in the studio rather than have them as two separate entities. And that had never happened before.
One of the things I loved about this exhibition was the use of video documentary footage, because we see how McNeish was incredibly famous in the post-war period, but also really assertive. She defines the patterns and the designs worn by white women who are her models. What do you think this shows us about the history of black women in design? And why do you think she might have fallen into a sort of relative historical obscurity?
Those videos, they were actually created by the government. The one that you're talking about, especially the fashion one, that was created by the Central Office of Information and actually distributed around the Caribbean and the Americas to tell people about the great work of fashion design here in the UK. So it's really interesting that the historical document was actually floating around, but we were never kind of shown that, even when I was at university. So here was a woman transforming fashion and design and setting this kind of pinnacle of what is good design. And she had this thing that design should be good, and what is good design is actually quite extraordinary. If you want to research, and I've been asked this so many times over the last 6 months, people keep asking me, well, where's her book? I can't find the book on her. I can't find the book on her. Well, there's never been a book on her. So that's why this exhibition is so important. And the research project that this comes from, which was sponsored by the Society of Antiquaries, allows an opportunity to do this in-depth research of a designer who at this time still only has chapters and abstracts and footnotes.
You mentioned about education there, and whether it was in the Trinidad Art Society or teaching in Walthamstow, she had a lifelong commitment to widening access to art. She was also one of the first and few women in the Caribbean artist movement. What was that?
She was invited by John LaRose, who was one of the founders of the Caribbean artist movement, and the whole movement itself lasted from 1976 to 71. Their actual process was about how to engage the British public in what was Caribbean art, and also the wider art movement, the wider kind of British art movement in what was Caribbean art. They knew there were lots of artists around, but how to get them together, then showcase what they were able to do. So it consisted of writers, it consisted of visual artists. But she was the only female designer artist at the time. There was another female artist that joined the exhibition in 1971 called Althea Bastian, and she did batik work. But for the 7 years, it was Althea's work that was actually showcased in all the work. She actually helped design the set of Full House, which was showcased on BBC Two. And it showcased the Caribbean artist movements, music, poems. And it's one of the few programmes that you can still see some of the artwork from those great artists. Some of that was showcased in Life Between the Islands that was on at the Tate. She felt it was a great thing to be part of, and it was showcasing the fact that these were artists in Britain who had the opportunity to educate a wider public on their work and to showcase their work in places like the House of Parliament. It was showcased around the country. Their work also went abroad to the US. I think for her, it was the opportunity to connect with other artists and other designers.
So Colour of Mine is the first retrospective to celebrate McNeish's century-spanning career of firsts. But you mentioned she was also featured in Tate Modern's Life Between Islands. You also research at Goldsmiths, and you've been involved in other exhibitions like the Horniman's Hair one. Do you think that we are moving towards more recognition of Black history as British history?
People are craving their own histories and recognition. And I think institutions are recognising the need to see representation. What needs to happen is that the exhibition should no longer be temporary exhibitions. They need to be permanent. When we have permanence, then I think that tells us that they see that we have now settled here. At the moment, lots of the exhibitions are temporary. They move around. And so there is always a rush to go see, because once they're gone, they're not back again. I think once you have a permanent exhibition, it becomes a place that you can go back and revisit, take the next generation there. They can see it. And we're not at that stage yet. There's no gallery I can go to and see a Caribbean gallery. I can see an African gallery, but I can't see a Caribbean one.
One of my favourite lines from McNeish that's featured in the exhibition is, "I opened the doors so others could follow." What is her legacy for British textile design today? And where else can we see McNeish's legacy?
In terms of opening the doors so others could follow, she wanted to show people that it was possible to be a successful designer. And she knocked on so many doors to show that it was possible. The fact that people are talking about her now and saying, "I didn't know that this woman existed, or this woman did this amount of work. I didn't realise that she had these technical skills, or I didn't realise that she did this amount of designs." We're already rewriting the canon. We're already rewriting that histories. It's already made clear that she has a legacy now. She sits alongside the likes of Lucien Dade, Shirley Craven, all of those designers that we see the books on the bookshelves. She sits alongside those in terms of her technical ability, technical prowess. Her designs are notable. When you look at Golden Harvest, which we've talked about earlier on, that ran for 20 years as a design that was sold. It only stopped being sold because the company shut down. So we have a designer that has a longevity across high-end design, but also the normal run-of-the-mill shop design as well. The show is going to tour for another 6 months. So if you're north in Manchester, you'll be able to see the show at the Whitworth in Manchester. The show will be much expanded because we can draw on the Whitworth's collection, especially with the wallpapers. So you'll be able to see a much expanded show from the collection that we've already got at William Morris Gallery. Come and see us in Manchester and see what else we can show you or tell you about Althea McNeish.
Thanks so much for talking to me, Rose.
And thank you so much for talking to me today as well.
This episode is part of Empire Lines at 50, featuring three exhibitions ahead of their final weekends. See the episode notes for links to the last tickets and the other episodes on Malanga Tana and Gwenya and Ingrid Pollard. Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.